Welcome to the Gooder Podcast, where we talk with powerhouse women in CPG about their journeys to success. This episode is sponsored by Retail Voodoo, a brand development firm guiding mission-driven consumer brands to attract new and passionate consumer base, crush their categories through growth and innovation, and magnify their social and environmental impact. If your brand is in need of brand positioning, package design, or marketing activation, we are here to help. You can find more information at www.retail-voodoo.com.
Hello, Diana Frank here with the Gooder Podcast, where I get to talk with the powerhouse women in the food, beverage, and wellness categories about their journeys to success and their insights on the industry. Thank you all for joining us today. Really quick, this episode is brought to you by Retail Voodoo. Retail Voodoo is a brand development firm. Our clients include Starbucks, Kind, PepsiCo, Hi-Key, and many other market leaders. We provide strategic brand and design services for leading brands in the food, wellness, and beverage categories. If your goal is to increase market share, drive growth, or disrupt the marketplace with new and innovative ideas, give us a call and let's talk. You can find out more about me, or Retail Voodoo, either is good, at retail-voodoo.com. Now, before introducing today's guest, I want to give a big, huge thank you to Ms. Karen Frame, CEO of Makena, a rewards program app providing benefit perks and, rewards to better-for-you consumers, distributors, and retailers. Get real-time data about your customers and channels from a simple, easy-to-use app. And for more information about Karen or Makena, check them both out at www.makena.com. That's makena.com. Now, today I'm excited to introduce Selene de Yaris, founder and executive director of Regenerative Rising. She is recognized for helping to galvanize the global regenerative movement by convening thought leaders from business, civic, academia, and agricultural networks for shared solutions to extractive models. Oof, my mouth is hurting today. In the food, fashion, and beauty industries, Selene designs programs to accelerate achieving broader commitments to social and environmental justice, climate action, and building a regenerative economy and system. Well, hello, Selene. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you so much for having me. Such a treat.
Thank you. Are you in Denver? You're in Colorado somewhere, right?
I am in Colorado. I'm based in Boulder County in Longmont.
Different than Denver.
Definitely different.
No offense to the Boulders or the Denvers or all of them. Like, they're different cultures, right?
Well, yes. I mean, Colorado has a lot of different pockets of reality.
Well, I always like it when the owners, brand owners, tell us about their brand. Now, you have a brand, yes, but we're talking about a different kind of organization. And so I would love it if you could tell us a little bit more about Regenerative Rising. What is it? What is the group about, and why does it exist?
I'd love to. Thank you. Well, Regenerative Rising is a 501c3 nonprofit organization. And so we are in service to really elevating the understanding of what a holistic frame in how we approach business, what that acts like, looks like, and behaves like in the living world. Mm-hmm. So it's a living systems worldview, which means instead of a mechanistic frame, which has dominated human thinking for quite some time, this is sort of reawakening to the fact that there is no separation. All life is interconnected and interdependent. And we can't really continue to operate in that mechanistic frame and hope to save ourselves from our current trajectory.
Yeah. So, I mean, very much for my brain, when I think of regenerative agriculture and we just apply it conceptually to the economy, that's really what we're building here, right?
Well, you know, regenerative agriculture is bringing a place-sourced approach to agriculture. And what I mean by place-sourced is that it's not a list. It is really assessing the specific place you are And what practices could you utilize that will improve the health and really serve the fullest expression of that place? So, you know, no-till versus cover cropping versus moving animals through the landscape. There are a lot of different ways to look at this, but a truly regenerative approach is place sourced. Okay. That's fundamental.
Okay. Okay. Well, so the question is, how did you get here? Why did you create this? And give us a little bit of a backstory.
Well, you know, I started convening back in 2010, and I live, as we mentioned, in Colorado, and Boulder has become this incredible draw for young upstarts in the natural products industry. So back in 2010, I started hosting events where I brought in thought leaders from companies that had already really baked into the DNA of their business more ecological considerations, sourcing more mindfully, leading their business more carefully, taking care of their employees. So I really wanted to offer the sort of representation of the possible to entrepreneurs to sort of go, you don't have to wait to be fully down the road. You can start to integrate these types of approaches to how you do business from the onset. So that's how everything started. And then in 2016, I had a company that was hosting that enterprise. I sold that business and spun it off into a nonprofit. And in 2016 at Expo West, I was very sensitive to the fact that this new kid on the block, regenerative ag, was kind of all over the show. And there was a lot of reactivity to this thing. And it wasn't happy reaction. It was concern it was troubling to see the different, just, I don't know what this is. Do you know what this is? And so it makes sense given that the leadership has spent 30 years building the foundation of an organic industry. And it's still a small percentage overall, despite that it's grown so substantially. So that inspired the idea of doing a summit. And so 2017, I launched the Regenerative Earth Summit and brought the leadership together. And it was kind of a mind blow because the who's who of the industry, our starlets, were there. And they really had an opportunity to work through some of the fears and concerns. And it actually was a turning point because from that point onward, the conversations had a different tenor to them. And so in 2018, I brought the food and fashion industries together. They'd never been in a conference together before. And my intent was, we're in either industry space accessing agricultural inputs. Supply is the dance here. If we can change how production is happening on the ground, we can change the conversation around our climate crisis. We can sequester carbon. We can restore carbon cycles. So that was kind of like, let's try this. So I'll, you know, see what happens. And it's been powerful because a lot of incredible partnerships have arisen through this work. And I am very humbled by the fact that some people literally will attribute those beginning conversations to being at the summits.
That's wonderful. I know, just like with organics or all of these movements, when we're looking at what's happening in manufacturing and the food side, I find it fascinating. Maybe you could talk for just a second about why food and fashion like that. To me, doesn't go together, but I know that you told me that there was a natural overlap or connection there. Can you talk about that for just a moment?
Sure. Well, let's just back up and say the three biggest impacts to the planet on a level of degradation and pollution are how we power ourselves, oil and gas, how we clothe ourselves, fashion, how we feed ourselves, agriculture. So food and fashion both source from agricultural inputs. You have flax makes linen, cotton makes cotton. You have leathers that are in the fashion industry. And then you have an overlay with, obviously, the food system is all derived mostly from agricultural inputs. So a regenerative approach to agriculture has to also leave the monoculture paradigm behind.
Yeah.
So this opens up the possibility for companion planting, garbanzos and cotton together in a field. It just changes what's possible. And it's also raising the bar of, you know, experimentation and exploration. So if you can have these large industries start to collaborate and cooperate around these types of plot experiments, for example, that's sort of the why for me. Okay. As to why it's important that they be talking. And I will just share, you know, like there are some very significant alliances coming together in the between these two industry players that are making an impact in a really positive way. So this has stewarded a different frame, and the industries on their own are also very much diving deeper into this consideration of how do we utilize our own supply demand needs to help foster transition on the ground from our producers.
Yeah. It's very interesting. I told you before that I've gone back to school to get my MBA, and our program is so much of the foundational elements from leadership are focused on looking at the environment and social justice as part of our stewardship as leaders, and learning about some of the efforts that like Unilever is doing, PepsiCo is doing, like really big companies are making strides, but they're such giant organizations that we don't necessarily have visibility on them because they're not necessarily tooting their own horns. But it seems like even yesterday, Walmart announced an investment in vertical farming organ. Like everybody is going, how are we going to do this? Because there's a net benefit to the business and the brand, but consumers are really pushing for that. And so I'm curious, you know, for you, because all of these movements start so much smaller, and you said, you know, we're talking about 2010 and 2016. And at the time, you know, Walmart and PepsiCo aren't into those trends quite yet. They're watching, but it's really kind of the smaller to small to mid-size organizations that are really pushing forward and wanting to start to make some movement. How has that changed in the last 4 years, right? You said 2016 was the first summit. I guess it's 2022 now. How has that changed in the last 6 years?
Well, 2016 was not the first summit. The first summit was 2017. Gotcha. But to your point, you know, I think there's a lot of concurrent forces flowing in our society. You have the Black Lives Matter movement, which has pushed the conversation forward around how much the system is not fair and just. Right. And so companies are having to lean into that. And as they're leaning into that, they can't help but bump up against the ecological inequities that come hand in hand with those social inequities. You know, we've heard of redlining. We know that a lot of communities of color are placed downwind from the bad production sites, while the white neighborhoods have more trees and are set in a safer distance from that stuff. So we're talking about really longstanding patterns that we're trying to bring light to and then disrupt.
Yeah.
And I like to say to people, you know, it's really important to recognize there is no separation between any of these issues.
Right.
At the end of the day, all of it is interwoven. How we care for each other, how we care for the land and the water, all of these things are ultimately part of a larger pattern. Are we willing to disrupt ourselves? Are we willing to disrupt longstanding ideas of what is success, what's an appropriate cost, what's the return on investment that's necessary, you know, is quarterly reporting really going to attend to the new thinking we need to have about longer term investments, a more patient approach to capital, to allow things time to really gestate and start to generate the value proposition that we know they can. Yeah. Nature is an amazing ally.
Right.
The living systems are extraordinarily robust and they're vulnerable as well.
Yeah.
But they respond really beautifully when we start to treat them better. Yeah. So do people. So all of this is interwoven in my humble opinion.
For sure. You know, as the brands are coming to you, because at the end of the day, brands exist to make money, right?
That's right. They
exist. When they're coming to you now and they're thinking about possible implications to their business, whether it be CapEx expenditures or repositioning of a brand, or I'm not even sure, or just taking care of their humans, what are the common concerns that you're hearing being brought up at this time?
Well, I think what most companies are trying to navigate is, does policy support what they're doing? They'd mm-hmm. like to see policy support what they're doing.
Yeah.
A lot of businesses would like to see that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we could utilize our tax system in a different way. We could incentivize patterns of investment by corporations that actually help us meet our goals for addressing climate, for example. Mm-hmm. We could use similar types of strategies to address rural development, because obviously a lot of agricultural activity naturally is happening in our rural communities. I just did a podcast with the administrator of the Farm Service Agency, Zach Ducheneau. Mm-hmm. And in our conversation, we started with the fact that 96% of farm families derive income off farm. And of that 72%, it's more than half their income that's coming from off farm. What other business do you know of that the primary source of your income is not the primary activity that you're doing as a business person? Yeah. It's very distorted. They get 14% or less of every food dollar. So the system in agriculture has so many challenges. Yeah. And a lot of the financial system of farming has locked farmers into patterns that are really difficult to extricate from, unless we start to redesign the way money is held and distributed, when people get money, how long they have before they have to start paying that back. It's large. It's not undoable. In fact, I like to bring partnerships together. So I'm actually working on making an introduction between a large company and the USDA to be having a conversation about a public-private partnership. It's like, why aren't you guys doing that? Other parts of the government do public-private partnerships. Yeah. Let's do it in ag.
Well, to be fair, you know, we're kind of rebuilding a lot of the political infrastructures that were kind of dismantled in the previous administration. I think there's still a little catching up to do there, but it's also, government is so stinking slow. You know, it just.
Yeah, but there are a lot of incredible people in government, actually.
Agreed.
And there's a lot of well-intended individuals. And you're right, you know, the politics of government can often interfere in the capacity to really stay on a course and see it through.
Yeah.
But the agricultural problem is far older than any recent administration. And, you know, there's a lot of, you know, really bad practices in agriculture that have been, you know, both discriminatory and not serving the health of our landscapes.
Yeah. Yeah. We might even argue that, you know, it's the post-World War II industrial revolution that was supposed to save the world. That's actually kind of pulling it apart a little bit, but
you think
really smart people working on it. Hopefully we can get there faster. You know, on that front, I want to just turn to for a moment, about leadership and your leadership philosophy a little bit, because I think this is really important component to driving a movement like this. You and I talked about this concept of feminine leadership. A lot of people have heard of this. Some people might know it well, but I really feel like it's not a great label because there's an automatic reaction to feminine leadership. But I think there's some power to us kind of level setting on what that means. How does it work with traditional male leadership? So from your perspective, let's talk about what is feminine leadership and how is it working within the efforts that you're doing right now?
Well, interestingly, you know, feminine leadership, I agree, it's going to create reaction, but I would posit we've been in a patriarchal system for over 2,000 years.
Yeah.
And the feminine voice has been suppressed and distorted during that time period. Mm-hmm. I do not think it would be authentic to say we even know what healthy feminine leadership looks like. Uh-huh. Oftentimes, we women who get into the corporate scenario, we emulate masculine behaviors to get a seat at the table, to try to assert ourselves. I have talked to so many women who have the experience of putting forward ideas, they're ignored, and then a male puts forward the same idea and it's, you know, the applause goes around. So right. I think women have been struggling for a very long time to figure out, you know, A, it took us a long time to even have standing. Let's not forget the ERA, the Equal Rights Amendment, hasn't even been passed in this country. So women aren't legally afforded equal rights to males. Mm-hmm. The right to vote is a relatively new sancture in actual true time. So I think it takes a little bit of stepping back and sort of looking at the arc of time and going, you know, women as leaders is a new phenomena and it's not universal. It is not planetary. It is limited to certain segments of, you know, certain parts of the world. Some places have maintained matriarchal systems, but even there's distortion at play. So when I talk about feminine leadership, I'm also, it's an invitation to other women to sort of go, what does this mean for us to bring our full self in? Because I think it's authentic to say we have multiple ways of knowing. Mm-hmm. And I think women tend to be associated with intuitive thinking or sensing.
Yes.
And there's power in the design of us as human creatures. And one of the attributes of that is to have that kind of intuitive hit about something, to listen to it, to nourish that, it strengthens that muscle, if you will, and it becomes a stronger cord of how we sense and appreciate the larger complexity around us. And I think women we're sort of designed with a higher aptitude for that type of listening. Yeah. And I also think we as women have not necessarily been put inside of a cultural milieu that encourages us to be really strong allies to each other.
Yeah.
And that's another piece for me in this sort of advocating for feminine leadership is I want to see us as women become deeply caring about each other's well-being, to be comfortable with elevating other women and not to be sort of in some sense of if you elevate her, it's going to reduce opportunity for you. And I think there's a scarcity inside of the feminine lens that I don't think pollutes the male system in the same way.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, in my opinion, and to further that a little bit more, I think what I have seen is there are some women that have a masculine, like naturally they are a masculine style of leader. And I have met many men that have very strong feminine leadership qualities. That's why I say I don't really care for the title too much, but they exist because it helps us, right? Because there, I have seen, especially in the last, I want to say, I mean, I've seen it through my career. And as I see the younger millennials taking on more leadership responsibilities, I feel like I see a bit more equity. I feel like women can have some more masculine components and not feel and not be considered domineering, and men can have more, are having more feminine leadership qualities and not considered weaker or less of a leader. So I feel like that the generationally, we're starting to see the shifts and a little bit more comfort along the lines of the leadership styles. And what I guess what I'm saying is, I don't want people to get hung up on the fact that if you're a woman, you have a feminine leadership style, because that's not exclusively.
No, I agree. I don't think that's, I talk more about regenerative leadership than I do feminine leadership.
Yeah,
and, and regenerative is really my game.
Okay.
And in speaking about the feminine, it's really honoring the fact that we have a long-standing inequity culturally, societally, that hasn't gone away. There are plenty of misogynist energies in our society, and you know, gender fluid, all of these things are wonderful. And that it's not really about the feminine versus masculine for me.
Right.
It's much more about, are we allowed to bring our whole self? Are we allowed to be expressive in a way that is maybe not the same as has been the normative way of decision-making, for example? You know, can we bring an intuitive insight and have that be treated with respect? So it's also, for me, you know, a regenerative paradigm is holistic, and it allows for the presentation and the essence of each individual to be honored and welcomed. And that to me is the ultimate goal. How do we create an environment where a tree is treated with respect as a living presence? It has its own intelligence. Right. If you lean into looking at the research that's coming out about trees, as an example, there is a lot going on that we have just not been privy to.
Right.
Our Native American brothers and sisters have had the idea of relative, a tree is their relative forever. They've never lost the appreciation and the respect for other living presences we have in the culture writ large. And I think it would be safe to say that has fueled behaviors that have operated without any care for consequence or impact.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. I like that you call it regenerative. I'll probably call it dynamic, I think, or intuitive. I think intuitive is really good. I think those are all muscles that have to be learned. You know, a lot of leadership programs still enforce or still train leaders to have a little bit more of that, what we'll call traditional leadership philosophies and mentalities. And so it will require continual education. That's where organizations like yours, well, you know, that's where Regenerative Rising can help organizations and people who've, they're not going back to school, but they want to learn, right? This is their opportunity.
Yeah, I would just, intuitive and regenerative are not co-equal as terms. Regenerative is a very ancient idea and is held with a lot of different principles.
Okay.
So, you know, intuitive is a capability that we carry.
Sure, for sure.
And regenerative is like a set of principles that can help guide how we show up and how we perceive and then how we act.
Thank you for that distinction. So now, as we're moving forward and we're looking back at the path of Regenerative Rising to date, I don't know that you could find a single moment in time or a single item, but is there something that you are most proud of that you, when you look back and go, yeah, that moment or that concept or that relationship was pivotal in the in this path that I'm on right now or that we're on right now?
That's a great question. A lot of things jump to mind. You know, there's something, it's a little bit more personal than professional. But it's really powerful in terms of my own journey. And that's, I just have stepped back into the work, my working world after breast cancer. And what has been so extraordinary and what I guess I'm most proud of is how my community and my team rose to the occasion. and have carried the work forward of Regenerative Rising with such incredible impeccability and didn't miss a step while I stepped back. Mm-hmm. So it was like members of my advisory board, Elizabeth Candelario, a dear longstanding friend in the industry, Nancy Coulter Parker, who stepped in to my request for help because there was no way. And I didn't want things to just completely unravel. And Trey Cates within Rhythm and my team, Tay Lati, and they stepped in so beautifully and stewarded, you know, 4 online summits. My friend Daniela Ibarra Howell, who's the CEO of Savory Institute, led 2. I just had named them Women on the Land and Women in the Wardrobe, who were leading regenerative practices in the fashion world and on in branching. And she just took it and ran with it. So it was a very beautiful reflection of this community, of the quality of care that was coming toward the work that I'd been stewarding all these years. And to me personally, just to like take that off my hands and give me the space to attend to my own healing journey, which I'm happy to say has been a very positive and healthy outcome for me. And the organization I feel is even more dynamic as a result of that process.
Well, I am sorry for that journey and for that diagnosis. And I'm happy to hear that you're back and strong. I know that it's not that it's a checkbox and it's done and done. This will be something you'll have to carry with you for quite some time, but how wonderful that you have this support system in place.
Yes, it was. Yes, absolutely. You know, cancer is an interesting visitor. And I think the frame of how we embrace that encounter is so significant to the experience that's possible. Yeah. I'm now helping other women who are getting this diagnosis. And, you know, I personally think it's an opportunity for profound growth.
Yeah.
As an individual, to really examine your life, to think about patterns. You know, I'm a person that's had a very healthy lifestyle for over 30 years. So when people heard of my diagnosis, it kind of freaked them out because, oh my God, she eats like that and she still could get cancer. Oh no. So I think the humbling part of all of this is like, we cannot know. Right. But if that does show up in your life, to move towards love, which is the path I chose, was a love relationship, you know, hey, cancer, in service to the host, me, and in your love for life as a cell, I'm asking you to self-destruct because that's in service to life. And that's what your ultimate programming is. You're just broken. Right. And I invited other people to share that approach with me. And, you know, I was like, please don't bring fear towards my body or my existence. Bring love, bring care.
Yeah. My gosh. That's so huge.
It's huge.
Yeah, it is.
It's huge. And, you know, what's beautiful is that in sharing, which is part of why I like to speak about it, I hope to offer that as an alternative to the tendency to go into fear. Yeah. And literally in a consult with a doctor, we're like halfway into the meeting with him and he goes, okay, I just have to stop. Who are you? We've usually gone through half a box of Kleenex when we're having this conversation. And it's like, you're laughing. You're asking really good questions. You're telling jokes. It's like, and I've just shared a little bit about my frame. Like, this is how I'm choosing to step into this journey. I don't know. And the other thing I will say is like, when you get a cancer diagnosis, you're suddenly thrown into a universe you've thought nothing about.
Right.
And so there is this extraordinarily long stretch of unknown. And to be in relationship to unknown can either put us into an extraordinary level of anxiousness and fear, or we can come to the present moment and go, all right, I don't know diddly.
Right.
So I'm going to just take this literally one step at a time.
Yeah.
I'm not going to jump ahead of myself. And that's what I practiced. And my husband and I did this, you know, really together as a team. But because there was so much I didn't know, I just made friends with not knowing, as opposed to having that become something that, you know, like gnawed on my nerves.
Yes.
Because I couldn't know what I didn't know. And to just make friends with that was a huge, huge gift to myself.
That's really awesome. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah. So as you're looking forward into what I hope 22 and 23 will start to see something normalized.
Right. Some ability to like venture out from our cocoons.
I know. I'm like, at what year will we start going? Hopefully this is the year things will be like. In any case, so what's next? What's next for you? What's next for Regenerative Rising?
Well, I appreciate that question. We will continue to bring our skills of convening to forward with online production. We have a Women Leading Regeneration Summit planned for April. We have the plans to do a Regenerative Earth Summit in the late fall, and we're considering, depending on what's happening in the outer reality, maybe doing a smaller in-person gathering, which would be very specific to purpose. Mm-hmm. And would probably be by invitation, and then we would still do an online program and share some of what's generated in that in-person gathering, if that's makes sense. I mean, I'm also very protective of myself, so that's part of the boundary condition.
Sure.
And then there's, we're embracing storytelling in a really exciting way with, we haven't quite decided if it's going to be more of like a docu-series or a full-length documentary film, but we've started doing some filming in Virginia at Silvanqua Farms and in Baltimore at the Black Yield Institute. We really want to elevate the stories of Black and Indigenous leadership who are attending to food sovereignty issues,
yeah.
who are generating new opportunities for the youth and their communities to have a path forward for, you know, like in Detroit at the Detroit Black Community Food Security Network.
Oh.
They are in the process of building a co-op, which is also going to have an industrial kitchen, and you'll be able to have chef training.
Nice.
And maybe some vertical integration with entrepreneurs. So yeah. we want to tell those types of stories as a way yeah. to address longstanding inequity. So there's the remembrance aspect, yeah. mm-hmm. but there's also how is this creating healing and connection for yeah. us culturally to be a witness to what's possible and also emulate these things that are going on in these communities.
So interesting. This Detroit initiative sounds a lot like the work that Natalie is doing in Chicago at the Hatchery, slightly different POV. Are you familiar with that? The work they're doing?
I'm not.
Mm-mm. I'll make sure to connect you to, not exact, like the end goal is the same, but the what you're pressing against are slightly different. But I think well worth connecting for sure. Wow.
So yeah.
I am really enjoying our time together. I have a few questions that are now that I like to ask everybody before we end our time together. You've already talked, I always ask everybody for like, I call it a happy hour tidbit or, some sort of fact about the industry or what you're working on or philosophy that people can share over a drink with their friends. Do you have anything that you'd like to share about the work that you're doing right now?
Well, I would just say, I think a good news message is to sort of acknowledge that the idea of separation is not really true. And the good news is that we really are connected and we really need each other. And so the beauty is let's really nourish that understanding. Let's activate that in our own lives. We walk outside. If we have a yard or we're stewarding a small part of Mother Earth, then let's really take care of that. Let's make that an abundant place for life to happen. Mm-hmm. And if we all start doing that in our own points of engagement, we become the change we seek. That's the most beautiful truth I know, is that it always starts here. If we put it out into the spaces that we have touch, we start to see a whole response come back to us. That's kind of awesome.
I love that. Thank you. Are there any women, other women leaders or rising stars out there that you would like to elevate or simply admire for the work they're doing right now?
Ooh, wow. There are quite a few. I'd love to honor a dear, dear friend. I mentioned her a little earlier, Elizabeth Candelario, who is now with an organization called Mad Agriculture, founded by a dear friend of mine, two dear friends, Philip and his wife, Nicole, who have put together a program that's working directly with farmers. Mm-hmm. And what Elizabeth is doing with a gentleman named Alex, they're helping build the market connection for farmers. And so directly linking, this is mostly in grain, regenerative grain production, creating connections directly to the brands who are looking to meet their own objectives for offering products to the market that come from regeneratively sourced products. So Elizabeth Candelario just is, she's just tenacious as heck. And I appreciate her efforts. And the other person I'd like to acknowledge is a 24-year-old. She's on my team. Her name is Taylati, and she is just such an inspiration to me. And I am incredibly grateful to her clarity of purpose and her sense of, you know, she's 24 and her understanding of this interconnected reality is so deeply rooted. And she's reflective of many in her peer group who are seeing this and really wanting to attend to the possibilities that it offers for healing a lot of challenges in our society.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Amazing. Thank you. I'll look forward to checking them out. I always do that after each episode. And then lastly, what brands or trends are you seeing in this kind of CPG world? Could be fashion or food, because, you know, you've said that, or energy, right? You know, I guess. What are you watching and why?
Well, that's another great question. I'm really inspired by an initiative going on with Applegate and Timberland. Applegate is a food company. Timberland is in the fashion space. They are collaborating around, you know, really cultivating a clearer guideline for what regenerative is as a production strategy on the land. Timberland has come out with a fully regenerative shoe line. It's regenerative leather, and they're getting support from Terra Genesis, which is an organization that does incredible work. And then they're also sourcing from ranches that are, you know, Audubon certified. So they're creating habitat for birds and migratory birds, and they're land to market certified, which is a verification. I should not say certified. They're verified by land to market, which is a verification initiative under the Savory Institute, which is a global organization bringing all sorts, the holistic approach to land management on ranches around the world that restore grasslands, which is one of our biggest opportunities to sequester carbon, is in grasslands. Yeah. So then, you know, Applegate just launched the first fully regenerative hot dog.
Wow.
How cool is that? I mean, it's all sourced from regenerative beef. And I think these folks who are bringing their just the level of integrity, I just can't overemphasize, because they're really paying attention to the foundation, which is the sourcing and supporting the agricultural actors.
Yes.
and then buying from those agricultural producers, and then not just small, but large, big, audacious vision for creating impact throughout their entire supply web and then their entire product line. So I just, I could sit here, if we had more time, I could just name more, but I'll stop there. But I think there's a lot for us to feel very hopeful about. Mm-hmm. And it's both relationally between people and then how we're relating to the living landscapes in which we are a part. And I mean, what's beautiful is, as I said before, each one of us, we are actors in our own play, and we can choose to be creating the world we desire with our own small steps we take where we are. And that adds up in the aggregate to be something really big and really beautiful.
Right. Well, I always like to say that, you know, my podcast is a drop, but my drop has ripples, and those ripples go far and they interact with other ripples, and pretty soon those ripples become bigger and bigger. And at some point there's a net change. I like the Applegate thing. I think for me is so exciting to hear, because the Applegate's relationship, of course, with Hormel, which that's a big deal. Like, success at Applegate trickles up.
It does.
Or downwards, or however you want to look at it. And Hormel is a ginormous organization. If they watch, if they're following the success and they're, of course, by default, participating, just think of the impact that that work is going to have. That's really fantastic.
Yeah. I'll just shout out Gina Asutigan at Applegate, who's that avatar inside of that behemoth. And she's really, you know, she's ringing the bell and she's being listened to. So again, you know, there's a lot to feel hopeful about. There's a lot of challenges, but I think it's much more exciting to focus on the positive.
Yeah. That's my theme for this year. Celebration. Focus and celebration are my two words for this year. So that fits right in there. I love it.
Fantastic. Well, I love that you're doing that, because, you know, we all have an energetic effect, you know, look at a little bit of quantum physics. And so that means it matters. It matters your set point in your day. It matters in my set point. We have an effect that ripples, to your point, out beyond us. So even if we're sitting in the quiet of our own home, if we're generating good energy as opposed to like, it makes a difference. It's like, what do you want to feed? Feed what you want to see, be what you want to see. And it all starts to work copacetically.
My goodness. Well, thank you. Well, we have been talking with Selaine de Yaris, founder and executive director of Regenerative Rising. Selaine, where can people learn more about you and what you are doing?
Well, thank you for that question. We can be found at regenerativerising.org. I'm on LinkedIn. We're on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter. And LinkedIn, the organization. And we also have a podcast, Regenerative Rising Podcast. Okay. So we're also on Spotify and Apple. The one I mentioned earlier with the administrator, Ducheneau, that's being released today. So let's all play. Let's spread the good news. And thank you again for inviting me. And thank you, Karin, for the recommendation. I'm very appreciative.
Thank you. Thank you for your time today and the work that you're doing. I'm excited to have spent this time with you, and I look forward to connecting in human time at some point in the future.
I would look forward to that as well. Thank you.
And then I thank all of you for listening to the Gooder Podcast today. Have a great rest of your day, and we'll catch you next time.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you haven't already, be sure to click subscribe and share with your network. Until next time, be well and do gooder.